one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Suffield. I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite films directed by Ridley Scott in honor of his newest film, Napoleon, in theaters this week. I'm very excited to delve into the career of Ridley Scott, and I'm very excited to welcome today's guest. Our guest today is Jamie Rebenall. They're a head writer at Cinema from the Spectrum, as well as the creator of Clouds of Gaia. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Brian, thanks for having me on again. It's been quite a long time. But it's been quite a long time since I was last here, and well, it's also nice to finally do this again after we just met in person for the first time this year.
I know, it's absolutely wild. When you were last on Film Fragments, that was the previous incarnation of this podcast, and now you're on the current incarnation. And yeah, we have met in person, which is absolutely wild. It's hard to believe that at the time of this recording, that was almost 3 months ago, but what is time, honestly? What is time?
Time is a construct, and that always changes every few months, so to speak, especially with daylight savings time and all.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But before we get into talking about our topic today, I would just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
So, as of this year, I just graduated from my term at Sheridan College. I was a student in the Bachelor of Film and Television program there. Right now, I figured that because my major was screenwriting, and well, we graduated in the middle of a certain event that we all are probably tired of hearing about, I would focus a little bit more on film journalism. And well, that's why I figured, you know, I'm still doing exactly what it is that kind of brought me into film in the first place. And I think I told you about this one, Brian, but I credit Ridley Scott with having kind of kickstarted my love of film when I was really young. And well, how that started, for those of you who have never heard this story before, well, it's because when I was 12 years old, I was invited to a sleepover with some friends, and Our movie for the night was none other than Alien, and at the time I remember thinking, oh, this is like super violent. I couldn't really handle watching something like this at night. But then, you know, it left such a huge impression on me to the point where I got home, immediately watched it again, and it's just really such an important film. For me, just in general, I could go on forever and ever, but I think I'm going to save all of that for when we get to the actual segment.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting how you've loved film, and you know, you studied it, and then now you're doing film journalism, and then the fact that the director that we're talking about today kind of catapulted your love for film is really exciting. And you know, going into that, transition into that, talk about why you think a lot of people, even though I will say up front that Ridley Scott, as respected of a filmmaker as he is, the man has had quite a hit or miss career these last few years, especially the last 10 to 15 years. He's definitely all over the place. It's like one year he makes a great film, the next year he makes a dud. Even though that's the case with Ridley Scott now, why do you think a lot of people do get intrigued whenever they see Ridley Scott's name attached to a project? And what makes you such a fan of Ridley Scott, other than the story, what makes you excited whenever you see Ridley Scott's name attached to a project? And why do you think a lot of people love him so much?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's the thing is, Ridley Scott, even though, as we've noted, he's a very hit-or-miss filmmaker, I find that he's one of those filmmakers who always knows how to pull you in with such a huge scale, because there aren't many filmmakers whose name, so to speak, would make you think, oh, you know, it's going to feel like a real big event kind of movie. Like a few, I think the other filmmakers I can think of that would really inspire that sort of shock and wonder would be Martin Scorsese or Steven Spielberg, especially if we're going to be talking American filmmakers who have had very consistent strings of success that also still remain so popular, even even in today's age, Ridley Scott, I think the reason why we always are so drawn to him as a filmmaker is because I think he's one of the few filmmakers right now that is still very consistently making period pieces. And around now, how often do you come across those? Let's be real.
No, I agree. It's very fascinating to see a filmmaker like Ridley Scott making the films that he makes, especially now at this point in his career. I mean, the guy's in his mid-80s, and he's making films that you wouldn't expect an 80-year-old to make, and I commend him truly for that. And I love that he's a filmmaker, and I say this all the time on this podcast, not to sound like a broken record, but my favorite kind of actors and filmmakers are when they don't stick to the same genre. Ridley Scott has tackled pretty much everything in his career, which is so incredible to say. I mean, he's done sci-fi, he's done period pieces, he's done action, he's done thrillers, he's done horror movies, he's done comedies, he's done dramas, he's done romances, he's done it all. And it's really incredible to see the versatility in his filmography. And yeah, even though he is hit or miss as of late, I do get excited to see whatever else he does, because even the bad films, I feel like he always gives it his all. You could always tell that he is passionate about the stories that he brings to life. And that's why I do have a lot of respect for him. Even though he's not one of my absolute favorite filmmakers of all time, I do always get fascinated whenever I see him releasing a new project. And also just the time that goes into all of them. You could tell that he pours a lot of heart into them. And he makes a lot of them back to back. There was a period where Ridley Scott wasn't like taking a break at all. It's like he made one big film and then he took like a month long break and then he jumped into making another film immediately. And it's like, dude, for a guy your age doing that, I mean, that's really impressive. There's people that are like three decades younger than you, three times younger than you, that don't even want to make one film every year. They want to make one film every 7 years. So I commend him truly. I've been a fan for a long time, even though, like I say, he's not one of my favorites. I always get excited whenever I see a film.
You think he's still taking
him.
A break right now? It doesn't seem like he's in the he doesn't look like he's in the break phase anymore. Because
well,
now that
you know,
he's got Napoleon and Gladiator 2 coming out, so
well, with the amount of things that he says during his press tours, I don't think he believes in breaks at all. So, you know, I commend him for that truly. But, you know, I'm excited to get into this list. I'm very curious to hear what your top five is. So I just say, without further ado, let's get into our list. So we're going to go through our 5 through 1. So, Jamie, what is your number 5 favorite Ridley Scott film of all time?
All right. So for number 5, I know some people are probably going to accuse me of recency bias for this one, but I am really, honestly, I'm going to have to go with The Last Duel as my number 5. And the reason why I would go with The Last Duel is because I find that it's one thing where we see a period piece that is just all about all of the sword fighting and all that sort of thing. But for something like this, it's a very multifaceted story, because it is a story about a duel that had to be initiated after the rape of Jodie Comer's character. I think the way that this story is told is it's fascinating to me, because when it starts, we always see how the men react at first, because obviously they're the ones who initiate all the violence in the first place. But then the way it's structured, it gives you more empathy for everything that's going on in Jodie Comer's mind. And I think it's just brilliant, just the way it all comes together, especially as it culminates in the title, in the title duel. Also, I just wanted to say that Jodie Comer robbed of an Oscar nomination for this one, and Ben Affleck getting a Razzie nomination. What a complete joke. Yeah, I am sorry. I just needed to get that out there, because there is no way that Ben Affleck is Razzie worthy for this one. And then, you know, Jared Leto doesn't even get that same treatment for House of Gucci and that fake Italian accent. I have to go on a tangent about this one here because it's also what I find to be one of Ridley Scott's most gorgeous films in general. And yet no Oscar nomination for this. What happened to that? What happened there?
So The Last Duel is right outside my top five. I was a huge fan of this movie when it came out. I really loved it a lot, and I really was impressed by the whole three-act structure of this movie. I mean, this literally is a three-act structure brought to life, and I really commend how Ridley Scott and, you know, the writers of this film, two of the stars,
Matt
co-wrote
Damon
the script
Affleck.
With Nicole Hobbs-Benner. And I really love how each act was a different. I found it to be a very interesting approach for a movie like this. And I thought it was riveting. It was captivating. It was really thrilling. It was intense. It was so well done. And again, this is an example of where you watch this movie and you would not believe for a second that an 80-year-old made this, because the battle sequences in this movie, the little amount that, but that titular final duel, I mean, you would think that someone much younger directed that, but no, it just shows how impressive Scott is behind the camera when helm in action. This obviously isn't the only time that we're going to be talking about his usages of action throughout his films, but I found this to be really riveting from start to finish. I agree, Jodie Comer was unbelievably good, and she should have been nominated for an Oscar. The Ben Affleck Razzie nomination absolutely makes no sense, because that was a ridiculous performance, but it embraced the ridiculousness, and it worked so well.
It worked so well, and that's because, a performance, you know, that
easily
just,
could not have worked.
Yeah,
it easily could not have worked, but thankfully it managed to work, and then Adam Driver did a great job. Matt Damon, you know, he was playing Matt Damon. He wasn't doing anything different than what he always does. But,
I agree.
I mean, the shots were gorgeous. Yeah, exactly. I agree. The shots were gorgeous. The costumes, the sets, all of that. And it just breaks my heart that nobody went to go see this movie. And I get it. It came out in the heels of, like, everyone going back to the theater and recovering from the pandemic and everything. But, and I, obviously, it's not the most exciting subject matter either. It's a very definitely difficult watch. I've only seen it once. I've only watched it once. I haven't gone to watch it again. It's a very harrowing film and everything. But I do wish that we had gotten a lot more love for the film. Critically, it did exceptionally well financially. And I anticipated that it wasn't going to do super well. But I didn't think that it was going to do as bad as it did.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder what it would have been like if this had come out, you know, say the pandemic never happened. Like, how would this have done? Would this have been like a huge awards player? Would this have gotten a lot more success at the box office? And I know box office and award success shouldn't matter with a film, but this feels like a film that was so up the Academy sleeve that it not getting nominated for anything is really, really sickening. And I'm a big fan of the movie. I'm a huge fan of it. I love it so much. You were going to say something before about Ben Affleck or something?
Yes, I think that when you were talking about how Ben Affleck's performance is ridiculous, I think that the fact that he is embracing the ridiculousness is one thing, but also that's just the nature of a lot of men who think they're at the top of the game in literally everything back in the era. So
I agree.
It's like, You're criticizing the movie for exactly what it's setting out for. What the heck's that all about?
Yeah,
huh?
I don't understand how that didn't get any actual love awards wise, because that was a great Ben Affleck performance. That was such a great supporting performance. And honestly, the script should have been recognized too. I mean, the screenplay here is so well intricate, and it's exceptional.
I was actually going to say this about the screenplay, because it's as much as it is very obvious which sections of the film are written by whom. Like, Matt Damon's section is written by, of course, himself. Then Adam Driver's is written by Ben Affleck. I think the way that it builds, one, it's structured much like Akira Kurosawa's Rashomon, which I think, mm-hmm. of course, it's a brilliant movie about how different people interpret a series of events. But also, it's like when you think about how all these different perceptions of what's happening are unfolding. It just really makes you feel for Jodie Comer, who ends up being the heart and soul of the film, especially mm-hmm. in her own chapter, which of course was written by the brilliant Nicole Holofcener. So yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a really brilliant script, and it should have been recognized for a whole lot more.
I agree. Yeah. And you know, we're not even gonna like talk about how that year awarded two of the two of the weakest screenplays in recent memory for best screenplay, the Oscar. Yeah, we're not gonna go into detail about it, but yeah, The Last Duel is great. The far superior 2021 Ridley Scott movie, the far superior one. Yeah. Father Son House of Gucci is not going to be found on either of our lists, so don't worry about that. So, so going into my number five, I'm gonna go with a film that honestly Ridley Scott was very close to winning his first Oscar for, and that's Gladiator from 2000. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of Gladiator. I think it's so. It's the definition of an epic brought to life. I mean, this thing is so exciting. It is so enthralling. And I mean, it's also pretty badass at the same time. And it's also kind of depressing. There's a lot of emotion sprawling throughout this long epic. And Russell Crowe is exceptional. He is so fantastic in this. Would I have given him an Oscar for this performance? Honestly, someone asked me that recently. I don't know if I would consider this an Oscar-winning performance, but it is a great performance from him. It's one of the best performances he's ever given, for sure. And the sequences in the Colosseum are just so impressive, especially for the time. I mean, in 2000, where CGI was starting to kind of take off and everything, it was hard to pinpoint like which sequences had actual animals or were CGI and everything. And Ridley Scott is so good at like having those moments, like having the audience unsure if it was real or not. And I just think the story of this guy getting revenge for the murder of his wife and child is, yes, it's something we've seen many of times, and it works greatly because of how this is brought to life. And this won the Academy Award for Best Picture, which you know, you think about whenever you think about a Best Picture, you think about films that will have a lasting impact, films that people will talk about for years to come. Gladiator may not be as talked about as some other Best Picture winners, but it is still a very popular Best Picture winner. And that is not a fault to the movie. It's a great movie, and it definitely was deserving of that title for sure. But it's been a hot minute since I've watched Gladiator, and we'll talk about our anticipation for the sequel at the end of the episode where we're talking about Ridley Scott's upcoming projects, but I love Gladiator. I remember just watching it back in high school and just being so blown away by the scope of it and Russell Crowe. And also shout out to Joaquin Phoenix. Unbelievably good churn here. One of his first Oscar nomination. And I mean, a delicious film that you just hate so much, but you're just in love with the performance that Joaquin Phoenix brings to life. And yeah, I cannot commend the battle sequences. They're so well done. And the imagery is great. The dialogue is great. The score is incredible. All of it's just great. And of course, the iconic "Are You Not Entertained?" One of the most iconic lines in cinema history, and for a reason. Not only because the scene was awesome, but because Russell Crowe's emotion in that. Oh my God, you felt it just going through every part of your body. You just chills down my spine. So Gladiator, I'm a big fan. It is my number five. Are you gonna pass, or is this not on your list?
It's not on my list, but I think. You know, I've always felt that maybe I should give this one another chance at some point, especially with Gladiator 2 coming out after all. And one of the reasons why I wanted to say that is because I know in high school I was not a big... I'm sure you remember me when I had this opinion in high school. Like, I wasn't really a big... I didn't really like Gladiator very much then. But I think back about how a movie like this was... a movie like this was made and became so popular at the box office. It was also credited for reviving the, it's credited with reviving the sword and sandal genre. I think that when you look at how far we've come since Gladiator has come out, the fact that something like this wouldn't even be successful today, it's a little heartbreaking to see. It's just a heartbreaking to think about to me. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I agree. I feel like if a movie like this were to come out now, people wouldn't go see it, even if it has a household name like Russell Crowe attached to it. Like, and this was also at a point in Russell Crowe's career where he was like the actor to work with because he was fresh off of an Oscar nomination for The Insider literally the year before. And then he did this, which won him an Academy Award. And then the following year, you could say what you want about the movie, but he was close to winning his second Oscar for A Beautiful Mind the following year. He would have pulled a Tom Hanks if he won two Best Actor Oscars back-to-back. He was that close to doing it. And I agree. It's unfortunate that a movie like this, if it were to come out now, nobody would go see it. Maybe they would. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, I agree. I feel like this wouldn't do – it wouldn't get the numbers that it got back in 2000 when it came out almost 24 years ago.
Yeah.
And times have changed. You know, 24 years ago, people loved going to the theater, and obviously there was no streaming. Now that there is streaming and it's really taken over everything, unfortunately, it's like people if it were to come out now, people wouldn't go see it in theaters. They would just wait to watch it in the comfort of their own home.
Not only that, but when you think about most of what we see in theaters, it's like people mostly really care about what sequels and familiar names and all that.
Sequels, prequels, remakes, all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
I hope the sequel to this does well. I hope people are like, oh, a Gladiator sequel. I'll go watch it.
Anything with something they recognize in some form or another. Yeah.
Yeah. No, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, some people compared this to like Ridley Scott's own rendition of like a Cecil B. DeMille. It was like so iconic and everything. It was like his own Ben-Hur or something. Like, it was just so celebrated and lauded. I can't believe that this even won Best Picture. When I found out it won Best Picture, I was genuinely surprised. I was like, oh, this is the last film that I would have expected to win Best Picture. But hey, I think it's cool that it won Best Picture. So yeah, you definitely should rewatch Gladiator. I feel like you would warm up to it now if you watched it now.
The thing is, I'm definitely not the same moviegoer that I was in high school. I also did want to say, I did want to add to this. It's like, when Gladiator came out in 2000, it was the second highest grossing movie of its year. And then this year, 2023, what's the second highest grossing of this year? Brian, you want to answer that?
It's not Oppenheimer, right?
No, but it is.
It's Mario Brothers, right?
Which of course everyone recognizes Mario, so of course they would go see that. Like, we had more. It just speaks to how we had a far more adventurous movie going crowd at one point. You know,
literally, I agree exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that'll be the case when the sequel comes out. Probably won't make as much money, but hopefully it makes some money.
I'm gonna hope it does. I will be there. I'll be there just for Ridley Scott. So if it's not good, I'm still there just for Ridley Scott.
I agree. We will talk more about our anticipation for that later on at the end of this episode. But going into our number fours, what is your pick?
Okay, so my number four is actually Ridley Scott's feature directorial debut. It is The Duelists. Out of all of his sort of period pieces, so to speak, this one's actually my favorite. And I also think that it's a movie that more people need to be watching, especially with Napoleon coming out, because this is a movie set in France during the Napoleonic Wars. So, why aren't more people actively seeking this one out? That's just baffling to me. Anyways, but that's not my point. The first thing I did want to say is that when you think about how... Okay, it was 1977 when this movie came out. it was his first feature. He makes a period movie that's so gorgeous. Like, you would think that that's the sort of movie that somebody like him would have made later on in his career. But no, he just goes for it straight up from the get-go. And I remember watching the sword fighting in this movie for my first time. I was thinking, wow, this is honestly, this is just some of the best. This is just some of the best sword fighting choreography that I think I've ever seen on film. Just in general, I was just completely blown away. I was just completely blown away when I saw this. And I also want to say, I think that what I find to be one of Harvey Keitel's best performances. And even though, of course, with Harvey Keitel being American, he doesn't get the accent right. But I mean, Ridley Scott's not one to care for accents, as we've seen in a lot of his period movies in general. So it's a movie that really does. It's a movie that really doesn't feel like your usual period piece in the same sense that many of his later films do. It just feels like a filmmaker who just simply wanted to do everything that he's always wanted, especially when we noted that he's something kind of like Cecil B. DeMille. He's been watching a lot of those films growing up, and it's like, you know what? I'm gonna make it as my first one. And what do you know? It's just that's all you really needed to know that he would eventually go on to make Alien later on. So, have you seen this one, Brian, or not yet?
So I have not. I have not seen this one. I'll be upfront with you in saying that I didn't even know that this film existed until you just talked about it a few minutes ago. But it sounds really cool. I was reading up about it while you were speaking about it, and yeah, it sounds great. I'm definitely gonna add it to my watch list for sure.
I believe it's on.
That sounds really cool.
It's
interesting that he did another film with the word "duel" in the title. So that's pretty sick.
Yeah, I was gonna add that. I believe it is on Canopy for you in the United States, whereas over here in Canada, if you want to watch this, it is on Hollywood Suite. I highly recommend subscribing to them. If it's only it's only $5 Canadian a month, and you honestly get your money's worth just from that. So, yeah.
Hey, sounds good to me. I'll definitely be adding it to my list for sure. And my number four, this is definitely going to be a very hot take of me having this in my top five, but let me explain my reasons when I get to it. So
okay. My
number four is The Martian from 2015. This has a very special place in my heart for me. First of all, I have to just address that I'm not a big reader. If you ask me to read a book, I'll probably be like, no, get that out of my face. But every once in a while, a book comes around that really has my interest. And that's how it was with The Martian. I remember someone telling me about this book just shortly before it was announced that a feature film adaptation was being made. And I decided to read this book. And again, not a big reader, but about a guy who's stranded alone on Mars trying to survive. I'm like, oh, it sounds like Castaway on Mars. Sign me up, please. And I read it, and I was so into it. I read it in like less than a week. I was that into the book. And then when I heard that the movie version was going to be directed by Ridley Scott, I'm like, cool, sign me up. And then that Matt Damon was playing Mark Watney, I was like, yep, this is perfect. And then I saw the movie, and I was just so over the moon about it. Like, literally, I could not tell you. I couldn't probably explain to you how much I loved this movie. I'm a sucker for movies about surviving and being stuck alone on an island or a planet, in this case, and what have you. And I commend Ridley. At this point in Ridley Scott's career, he was kind of throwing out a couple of duds, like right before The Martian. He had The Counselor, which Wolf, and then he had Exodus: Gods of Kings, which also Wolf. And then he had this where I'm like, oh, Yeah, literally. I was hoping that this movie would not be a woof. I was hoping that this movie would be a massive thumbs up and a woohoo. And to me, this was a massive woohoo. In fact, it was actually my favorite film of that year. Now, it has been a long time since I've watched this in its entirety. But what I love so much about The Martian is that it is a very, like, you watch this movie knowing that this isn't a real story. But for some reason, the way that Ridley Scott and Drew Goddard present the story, it makes it feel like that this is actually based on a real person. It makes it feel like that Mark Watney is a real person. Like, oh, this guy was actually trapped on Mars, and then his entire team had to go back and rescue him. And it's such a great survivalist tale. And I know that there are people that aren't a fan of how comedy is incorporated into this. Kind of similar to The Last Duel, but I feel like with this, the humor, not that it didn't work in The Last Duel, but I think here it's really exceptional. And, you know, Matt Damon is very good at delivering dry comedy. This isn't something that he was new to at that point, but I think he was perfect as Mark Watney because he had so much likability incorporated into that character. And Matt Damon, you could say what you want about him, I think he is a very likable on-screen presence, and this is one of the most likable characters that he's ever played. And, you know, I'm not a science guy, I don't look into scientific accuracy and what have you, but I remember reading from scientists that this movie was pretty, like, faithful to a lot of its scientific elements and what have you. And I also love the score. I think the score here is really exceptional. And the imagery is great. They shot on location, not on Mars, obviously, but they didn't shoot all the exteriors where he's just roaming around Mars. Like, that's filmed in actual deserts, which I think is great because nowadays, a lot of filmmakers just shoot on a green screen. They don't go outside. Like, go outside. It's like what Denis Villeneuve has been doing with Dune. He's literally shot on location. Yes, of course, there's sound stages incorporated into all these films. Of course there is. There's not an actual spaceship that they could film inside of. But I really just think The Martian is so engaging and so captivating and so entertaining. And Matt Damon really is amazing in this film. And I didn't think that this was going to be a major Oscar player. I thought this was just going to be a cool blockbuster that happened to come out later at the end of the year. And it got a few Oscar nominations. It got 7 nominations, including one for Best Picture, Best Screenplay. And the biggest surprise of all, Matt Damon for Best Actor. I think it is one of Matt Damon's best performances. It's one of my favorite performances that he's ever given. And I love the ensemble surrounding him, too. I mean, you want to talk about a director that could assemble a great ensemble? Ridley Scott is no stranger to that. I mean, you have Jessica Chastain, Jeff Daniels, Michael Pena, Sebastian Stan, Kristen Wiig, Sean Bean, Donald Glover, Chiwetel Ejiofor. Really great cast. Really great cast.
And Sean
here.
Bean in a role where he doesn't die.
I was just as shocked as you. I was just like everyone else. I was genuinely expecting him to die, even though he wasn't part of the crew that was going up and rescuing Matt Damon. I was like, oh, Sean Bean's gonna bite it off. He's gonna croak at any second, and shockingly, he did not. But no. In all seriousness, I love The Martian. I think it's great. It's a film that doesn't get talked about that much anymore. I know that this was a very celebrated film when it came out, but in terms of the recent Ridley Scott outings, I definitely wish that this got a little more recognition because it is a great outing from him. And to me, it's not only one of the best films he's ever done, it's one of my favorites that he's done. So it's my number 4. I know that this isn't on your list, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on The Martian.
You know, I don't think I've ever told you this, but this was actually the first movie I joined a rush line for at TIFF. And
really? Oh, I forgot to play that.
Yeah,
TIFF. Wait, I'm reading that right now. It premiered at TIFF.
Yeah, you can guess how that went.
Not well.
No. Well, you've been through rush line pain this year as well, so you know
exactly how it felt. Oh, I absolutely have.
Yeah, I so the thing is, when I did eventually see The Martian, I did think, you know, it is all right. I didn't quite love it as much as I know a lot of my friends did. But at the same time, I just said, you know, I think it is a sign that Ridley Scott is slowly getting himself back on track. If anything, I'm very glad that he was able to make this with the amount of effort that he did, especially with how you noted it was shot in deserts, especially because, you know, that year was such a strong one for the Oscars, I found, especially because they also nominated Mad Max Fury Road for Best Picture, which was also shot entirely in the desert. And, you know, that's just the sort of commitment that we just really love seeing from filmmakers in general. And the fact that Ridley Scott is always like this, no matter what, I think that he's just really, he really just happens to be one of the most exciting working day, especially if something like this, so you watch something like this and even you aren't going to say, yeah, I loved it. You're not going to say, even if you're not going to say that it was as great as everybody else is making it out to be, you still just have to admire the craft, I find. Like, if you were to say otherwise, I would think you're insane. But also, when we noted how it uses comedy, I think that it's very brilliant in how it does that, because, of course, when the whole game is survival, you kind of need to have comedy to allow yourself to pass the time a little faster, especially if you wanted to be in the same space as Mark Watney. But was it really the best comedy of the year, as the Golden Globe said, though?
Okay, that I agree was absolutely absurd. That was ridiculous. There were comedic moments throughout the movie, but it was not a comedy at all.
Yeah.
I as a big Martian fanboy, I will admit that that was ridiculous. That made absolutely no sense why that was. What else was even nominated that year? Let's take a live look at this. Okay, Big Short, Joy, Spy, Trainwreck, and The Martian. Well, The Martian was probably the best one of those five. So, I mean, I guess I can't complain entirely that it won. But we're not going to go into full detail about that. But The Martian's my number four. It's great. I love it. I really do love it very much. And I will always love Ridley Scott for making the joke that he made on stage when he accepted the award for The Martian as the best comedy of 2015.
Remind me, what did he say again?
He's like, comedy? He was like, I don't know about that. Just like his expression was just really, really gold. It was just so amazing. But, you know, now going into our number threes, what is your pick?
My pick for my number three is none other than Thelma and Louise. And I saw this one in theaters twice this year, and it was the brand new restoration that he worked on for Criterion. What I really want to say about this one is that when you consider the sort of movies that Ridley Scott is known for, this almost feels like something you would expect somebody else to do. But it's very clear from the very first frame that this is material that Ridley Scott is really, really passionate about, because most of it is really beloved films, whether they go from Alien or even The Last Duel. They're very feminist movies. This is like where he peaked in that regard, because it is a movie about women who just simply want to go out, have a little fun, but then of course when something bad happens to one of them, of course everything turns in favor of the men around them. And so it also feels like it is his angriest movie. Just as much as it is his angriest movie, it is also just one of his most fun to watch, I find. But wouldn't you agree with that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew you would.
I would indeed. Is there anything else you want to say about Velma and Louise?
Yes, indeed. The stars. Yes, of course. The two Oscar-nominated stars, Gina Davis and Susan Sarandon. So they are just, oh my goodness, they really are just two of the all-time great movie characters, as I would say. But also, that ending scene, I remember when I first saw that one in high school, I thought, this is how it ended. But when I watch it now, I think to myself, you know what? I can't even think of anywhere else it has to end. And it's just one of the... It is also just one of the all-time great movie endings, too.
This is a big, big pass for me. I will be talking about it when I get to it. So stay tuned, everybody, for that. My number three is American Gangster, which I think is one of Ridley Scott's most criminally underrated films of his entire filmography. We have Denzel Washington starring as Frank Lucas. He is a gangster who smuggled heroin into the United States after returning home from the Vietnam War. And then he is basically on the run and being interrogated by a detective based in New Jersey, played by Russell Crowe. And Ridley Scott had tackled crime before, but this is like a true gangster crime film that we hadn't seen from Ridley Scott before. And I think it's one of the best films he's ever done. There was a point where this was my favorite Ridley Scott film of all time. Like, for years, this was my go-to answer. Everyone would talk about some of the classics that he helmed, and they're obviously incredible, of course. But American Gangster, people just think about, like, The Godfather and everything that Scorsese has done as the true gangster crime films that we have gotten. But I think this should be on the same level as that, because this is utterly exceptional. Steven Zaillian wrote the screenplay for this, and he is an Oscar winner. He won the Oscar for writing Schindler's List, but he did later on pen the screenplay for The Irishman, which is also a great gangster crime drama. But yeah, Ridley Scott, I just think that this was such a cool side of him that we hadn't seen before, and I think it really is gritty, and it's a great throwback to the classic gangster films. And the lead performances, like Denzel and Russell, are firing on all cylinders here. They're both so, so good. This film is told so smoothly. There's not an ounce of fat to be found, and it is a long film. And Ridley Scott is no stranger to lengthy runtimes. Well, that's just something that we have to address. But I think the lengthy runtime here is utilized very beautifully. I can't think of a moment that could be cut out or cut down. I can't think of anything like that. But I really love the gangster approach that Ridley Scott took to this. And I really genuinely do love the performances from these two guys. If you were to ask me one of my favorite Denzel performances, this is one of them. And it's one that I think he should have gotten nominated for. Same with Russell Crowe. I think Russell Crowe is genuinely great here. But there are a lot of crazy twists and turns that are happening throughout this film. One thing I will say is that if you're a lover of dogs like me, just be warned for a certain scene that happens towards the tail end of this movie. It made me hate Josh Brolin for a little while. I will tell you that right now. I love American Gangster. It's kind of criminal that this doesn't get as much discussion as it should, because it's a freaking gangster movie with Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe. I mean, two of the coolest actors working, both Oscar winners. And yeah, I don't know what else to say other than it's an exceptional outing from Ridley Scott. And for a long period of time, it was my absolute favorite thing that he had directed. And I really think that within the last 16 years. So I would say within the last 15 to 20 years, this may be the best film that Ridley Scott has directed in that 15 to 20 year period. And I know it's also directed, but really, this is a great outing from him and one of his absolute best. So American Gangster is my number 3. I don't see this being on your list either. So I would love to know your thoughts on American Gangster.
It is not on my list either, but I'm going to confess something right now. We've also never really talked about how Ridley Scott is always one for director's cuts, right?
Yes.
I've actually never watched the director's cut of this one, so that's why my rating is fairly low.
I'll tell you right now, I haven't seen the director's cut of this either.
Yeah, so I figure, you know, there's a lot of very admirable qualities to the filmmaking here, because of course, I think the fact that Ridley Scott shoots this almost in a very quasi-documentary style, it's something that you don't usually see in a lot of gangster movies, too. I mean, even Sorry about that. I had some background noise on there. You can edit that out? Or?
No worries. Yeah, I can cut it out.
Okay. I was going to say that because Ridley Scott shoots this in a very quasi-documentary style, which isn't something you usually see in a lot of gangster movies, I think that's also very unique to how Ridley Scott wanted to show it, because he of course doesn't want to become like another Martin Scorsese or everybody associates him only with gangster movies, even though of course Scorsese doesn't only make gangster movies. But I think that it really just pulls you into that world so easily, and it really is just great filmmaking all around. And you were talking about Denzel and Russell Crowe, of course, delivering great performances, but we got to talk about the Oscar nominee performance for this movie.
Ruby Dee.
Yeah.
Great motherly figure. Great motherly figure.
She really is the heart and soul of the movie, I would say.
She really is.
Especially because we always think about how everything that Denzel and Russell Crowe get themselves involved in, it's like obviously they're all getting into this really seedy criminal underworld, whereas Ruby Dee being a mother figure, it's like she you can see so much compassion in her performance. I think that it really is. I'm just glad if it at least got one Oscar nomination, it was for Ruby Dee.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So now, transitioning into our top two, this is going to be very, very interesting, because I have a film that I obviously passed on. You have not come across mm-hmm. that yet. I have a feeling I know your top two. I don't know where they are in your top two, but I think I know exactly what route you're going towards. So why don't you tell the listeners what your second favorite Ridley Scott film of all time is?
Well, my number two is none other than Alien, which I know. So you probably were listening to how this episode started and thinking, oh, it's Aliens, the movie that kickstarted your love of film. It should be number one, right? Yeah, well, it's almost there. So what I wanted to say about Alien that I obviously couldn't at the start of this episode, because I was waiting to hype you all up, is that aside from being just one of the best horror movies ever made, just like Thelma and Louise, it is one of the great feminist pictures, I would argue. One of the reasons why I would say this is because, of course, Ellen Ripley, she is one of the great movie heroines. What I think that this movie does really well is that of course, and many say this, it is a essentially a haunted house movie set in space, but the fact that it's still everything is kept so simple to the point where, you know, the alien itself shows up to the just like a ghost would in a haunted house movie. I think that it's really one of the great movies just all about the fear of the unknown, which is something, of course, that's very Lovecraftian in a sense. It's almost like the best H.P. Lovecraft movie that wasn't even directly based on H.P. Lovecraft, because I don't think H.P. Lovecraft has written anything about aliens, but he has played around with the fear of the unknown. And my God, that tagline, in space, no one can hear you scream. Can we really beat that one? I don't think we can. I'm trying to think what else I was going to say, because I already know I'm feeling like I'm just rambling, because that's just the sort of thing that this movie really puts me in. Because of course, I also like to say that with how Ellen Ripley is, how her arc is formed through the course of the movie. It's of course we all know her as the first female lead in action movies, but I think that her ostensibly being the strongest figure out of everybody else on board, it's like that's how you. I look at Sigourney Weaver's performance. I just think to myself, "No, you go, girl." Ryan, you gonna say something to that?
So, this is not on my list, actually. I know it's very shocking. I told you right before we started recording that I wanted to just throw surprises, and this is one of those surprises. I mean, to echo everything you said, I mean, Alien is really, I do love it. I really do appreciate it. I think I'm in the camp where I prefer Aliens over Alien. But, I mean, there's no wrong answer when you pick which one you prefer. There's no wrong answer. I mean, they're both exceptional films, especially for their genres and how they're both drastically different from one another. I mean, this is a straight-up horror movie. And then Aliens, directed by James Cameron, is pretty much a complete 180 and is a straight-up action movie. And it's great. Mm-hmm. It delivers. But, yeah, this movie terrified the crap out of me when I was younger. I haven't watched this as much as I probably would like, because it genuinely does freak me out. And that's what I want in a horror movie, is to freak me out. And that's the case with Alien. I think it is really awesome what they were able to pull off in the late 70s, making it scarier than most of the movies that have come out in the almost 45 years since this movie came out. It's a game changer, and I know this is really the film that kind of catapulted really Scott's career. I was always under the impression that this was the first thing that he had ever directed prior to when you talked about The Duelist earlier in the episode, but if this had been the first thing he directed, I mean, one of the best directorial debuts ever,
it would be, for sure. Yeah.
but I love Alien. I mean, it is great, and... I mean, what can you say that has been said already? I mean, this is one of the most influential films of all time, not just in its genre, but just in film in general. And yeah, I love it. I really do love it. It's a great film. And my number two is such a drastically different film from Alien. We're going to go from a straight up horror film to probably the funniest film that Ridley Scott's ever directed.
And which film would that be?
This is another very underrated entry in Ridley Scott's filmography. Now, why isn't this talked about very much? Pfft, hell if I know. My number two, and I always get excited anytime I talk about it on this podcast, my number two is Matchstick Men from 2003.
Ah.
I can, first of all, the fact that this is 20 years old makes me disgusted. It makes me disgusted because, again, time is going way too quickly and I don't like it at all. I hate getting older and I don't like that this movie is old either. So, we have Nicolas Cage as a world-renowned con artist, and he's pretty great at what he does. His partner in crime is Sam Rockwell, and they're doing so great with what they're doing. And then all of a sudden, things take a drastic turn where Nicolas Cage's daughter comes into the picture, and she wants to partake in the conning people as well. Now, a very important thing to keep in mind with this movie is that Nicolas Cage, even though he is a con artist, he goes through so many trials and tribulations. He is a guy that has severe, and I'm talking flat out severe OCD, and it really adds to the comedy of it. It's really incredible. He also has Tourette's syndrome. That's very important to acknowledge as well. But what I really love about this movie, again, it's similar to what I talked about with The Martian and American Gangster, this is not a film that you would have anticipated Ridley Scott, of all people, to direct. Because you watch this film, you think, oh, anyone could have directed this. You don't really get a sense of Ridley Scott-isms sprinkled throughout this movie, which I do commend. I appreciate that very much. And, you know, with it being a comedy, its main goal is to make you laugh. And I think this movie has a lot of great laughs sprinkled throughout. And it's mainly because of Nicolas Cage's performance. This, in my opinion, is one of the best performances he's ever given in his career. And we're in a year where Nicolas Cage has a performance that's being heavily regarded as one of his absolute best, which is great. By the way, if you haven't seen Dream Scenario already, please go see it. And if it hasn't come to you, please go see it as soon as you can. Thank you very much. Back to Matchstick Men. Nicolas Cage is really the main reason why I love this movie, because there are so many freakouts and so many outbursts that he has that we love Nicolas Cage for. But there's a particular sequence in a pharmacy that stands out as not only one of Nicolas Cage's best scenes, but it's also one of the best scenes in any Ridley Scott film, because he's freaking out. He's looking for this particular medication, and then they tell him that there's supplements, and he's just freaking out. He's just going, no, 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 no. Oh shit, man! It's too good. It's too good. But also, like, the whole family dynamic too between father and daughter is really cool too. It's a different side of Ridley Scott that we haven't really seen at that point. And Alison Lomain, I think, is great. This was at the point where Alison Lomain was like in a lot back in the early 2000s. She also had Big Fish come out the same year. Another great film, by the way, a great, truly underrated film. But, I really just think that in terms of the black comedies that we get nowadays, this is one of the best ones that we've gotten in the last 20 plus years. And again, Nicolas Cage is so exceptional in this. He's fantastic. I don't think he's worked with Ridley Scott since. I think this might be the only time that he's worked with him. And I want to see Nicolas Cage do more films like this where we see like a genuinely great performance out of him. And we got that here. And I know that we're at a point where we're starting to kind of get that again every once in a while, but I love Matchstick Men. I discovered this film during the height of COVID. I hadn't watched it. And then when I was in lockdown, I had nothing to do, and I was trying to catch up on all these movies that were on my watch list. This is one that I had been wanting to watch for a long, long time. And it immediately skyrocketed to being one of my favorite films from Ridley Scott, Nicolas Cage, and everyone else involved, as well as the genre itself. And then there's certain twists throughout this movie too that really caught me off guard. People could say that they had an idea where this film was going. I certainly didn't. I watched the movie and I'm just like, okay, this did not go down the way that I was anticipating. I really think that if you're going to talk about an underrated Ridley Scott film, I mean, I already talked about American Gangster. This is way more underrated than American Gangster. And it's disappointing because, you know, people talk about, oh, Ridley Scott's never done like a straight up comedy before. Well, he has, and it's this movie. And if you haven't seen it, you're doing yourself a huge disservice. So Matchstick Men is my number two. Love It to Pieces, great film, fantastic entry from Ridley Scott. So what are your thoughts on Matchstick Men?
You know, this one was actually almost in my top five.
Oh,
it's actually
goodness.
At number six right now, so
oh,
yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
So that means you're a big fan. So that means you must be a big fan of it.
Indeed I am. It's I should mention right now for anyone listening, I think at the time of this episode's recording, it is on the Criterion channel, so if you haven't seen it, definitely do yourself a favor right now, because you'll have Nicolas Cage shouting, hey, have you ever been dragged out? I tried to remember exactly the words. Like, have you ever been dragged out to the sidewalk and beaten until you pissed blood? I can't even get the tone right. It is just one of
it's hard to replicate it. It's hard to replicate. Yeah. It's so good.
The way he delivers that one line is just honestly, that is just one of his best moments. Is like in general, and like the thing is, we always associate Nicolas Cage with all these big freakouts, but because of course he's really great at all these. But even beyond that, he really is just one of the best actors working today. Yeah. Doesn't even matter where you put him. But at the same time, I think that it is a perfect case for how a director who is often associated with period movies and science fiction movies can really just change their tune if they really wanted to with such ease. Because Ridley Scott did it when he pulled off something like this. It's like, oh, this is the first time we've seen another a comedy of sorts from him, since what, Thelma and Louise? So yeah. Which, I mean, Thelma and Louise is comedy drama, but it still fits the bill, I would say. So yeah,
I agree. Yeah, man, this movie really is great. It's so exceptional. I just love it so much, and I'm glad you love it as well. I'm glad that you're also a fan of it. And now our number ones. I would be very, very surprised. I would be very, very, very incredibly surprised if the poster behind you is not your number one. It would literally shock me to my core if we went through five films and this particular film didn't even crack your top five. So can you tell the listeners what your favorite Ridley Scott film of all time is?
So yes, the poster that Brian is referring to is none other than the Blade Runner poster. And this movie was a really big game changer for me when I was really young. And I remember seeing this for the first time only very shortly after I saw Alien. And I thought to myself, I was just completely in awe. Just everything I was seeing on screen. I'm pretty sure that the version I saw was the director's cut before we had access to what we now consider the definitive version of Blade Runner in none other than the final cut. But I think that when I watch Blade Runner, I've seen it in theaters twice. My second time being in the biggest screen in Ontario, which is the IMAX Cinesphere, which sadly, Brian, you didn't get to experience this year because that place is under renovations right now. I think that it really is just one of the most dazzling movies ever made. And one of the main reason why it is my favorite is because it's the one that I've watched the most. It is a mystery film. It is a very contemplative movie, which is what I love in a lot of science fiction movies, especially some of my favorites of 2001, Solaris by Tarkovsky, of course, 2001 book. And really, it's just I think that especially around now, when we think about how our fascination with artificial intelligence has gone on to such terrifying degrees right now, it feels like the fact that this movie came out in 1982 almost feels kind of freaky, because it is it was very prescient, even though the 2019 depicted in the movie is very much not the 2019 that we lived, for sure. But it almost feels like it could very much be a reality, you know? And plus, Rutger Hauer as Roy Batty, can be just one of the all-time great movie villains, too. And also, since you were just clapping out for Rutger Hauer when I mentioned him, rest in peace, Rutger Hauer. You were one of the absolute greatest.
Yes, 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 yes. So, yes, unfortunately, that means Blade Runner is not on my list. I think that very soon I will be on the train where I absolutely adore Blade Runner. I really like Blade Runner a lot, and I think it is such a game changer for the sci-fi genre, and for a film to come out in the 80s and make all the predictions that it did, well, the theories that it did, and end up being wrong. Great. It's great. What were we going to say? Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, hey, to be fair, a butchered version of it came out in the 80s. So
that's true. Yeah. That is true. That is very, very true. Yeah. I haven't seen the theatrical cut. I have seen only the final cut of the film. I've only seen that. That's the only cut I've seen. Because apparently that's the cut that really likes everyone to watch. So I'm just going off what the director wants. But yeah, it's pretty great. I don't know why I don't love it, because I loved 2049, which obviously really did not direct, but I adored 2049. It's one of my favorite films of the past 10 years. It's one of the rare cases where I like the original, but I adore the sequel. I adore the sequel. And sooner rather than later, I'll probably be on the train similar to you and a lot of our other mutuals and all these other film geeks that I love Blade Runner. But I really like it a lot. I really like it a lot. And now my number one is a film that you talked about earlier.
Before you talk about your number one, I was going to say that I think that it was just seeing Blade Runner in theaters that really just locked it in for me. But have you gotten the chance to see it in theaters or not yet?
Not yet.
Then maybe you'll finally come around when you do, or maybe not. Who knows?
No, I believe that I probably will. I probably will come around to it when I see it on the big screen. There have been opportunities to see it here in New York, but I just haven't been able to get the chance to do so. I've missed a lot of the opportunities, so hopefully soon. They're always screening it at least once a year here in the city, so hopefully that happens, and hopefully I get to see it for sure. So my number one is Velma Louise. That's my favorite Ridley Scott film. I also think it's the best thing that he's ever directed. You brought up earlier something very, very pivotal, is that Ridley Scott was the last person I ever would have thought to direct a film like this. And Ridley Scott found a way of making one of the most iconic feminist films ever. A man directed that. I mean, who would have thunk? Who would have thought that? But Ridley Scott knocked it out of the park. He pulled it off beautifully well. And something that I love, and you brought that this is a comedy, drama, dramedy mix, what have you. It's very hard to blend comedy and drama and make it work as well as it does. There have been many films that I've seen, at least, and I'm sure you have as well, where blending the comedy and drama doesn't, it's not a clean product. It's not exactly a smooth product. But this is a whole other level. I mean, this is like, it's funny one minute and then it's sad the next, and it works so beautifully. I mean, the fact that this could make you smile and have a great time, and then the next you're literally on the edge of your seat, not sure what's going to happen to these two characters. just comes to show how great Ridley Scott directed this, but also the screenplay, the Oscar-winning screenplay. One of my favorite scripts of all time. Lots of great dialogue sprinkled throughout. I will admit that I haven't seen Thelma Louise a lot. It's one that I watch every couple of years. When it was announced that it was coming to the Criterion Collection, oh, that was a day one during that sale. That was a day one buy. When that sale started,
oh, that was a day one. That was a day one buy for me as well.
That was like the first thing that I bought during the sale. And that 4K looked great. It looked exceptional. I love it's one of the cleanest transfers that Criterion has done yet. It is so great. And all the supplements that come with it are wonderful.
I was gonna say this is a year where Criterion has really just been so strong in general.
I know. Well, I mean, to be fair, they gave us After Hours, so of course this was going to be one of the strongest years ever.
Exactly, yeah.
As soon as they said After Hours, I'm like, yep, that's it. This is going to go down as the best year. They'll never be able to top this year unless they put out, like, Catch Me If You Can on Criterion or something. But one could dream, can't they? But now, going back to Thelma and Louise, I love it so much, and really the big reason is because of these two performances. Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis are both extraordinary. And like you said, they were both nominated for an Oscar. And I want to pose this question to you. If you had to give one of them the Oscar, because I always struggle with this question anytime it's asked or anytime I'm watching the movie, I don't know who my favorite of the two is. They're both so different from one another. Gina Davis as... Thelma is so bubbly and fun and everything. Then Susan Sarandon as Louise is the complete opposite. She has street smart. She's very tough and she knows what she wants. And then everything just also changes drastically. Also, in a sense,
the voice of reason between the two of them, too.
The voice of reason, exactly. And mm-hmm. I don't know which performance I prefer because they're both equally terrific. It's like, who do you pick? It's like picking over your favorite child. It's like, who do I choose between the two? So, you know, before I finish my thoughts on the movie, which performance do you prefer? Because I don't know.
I think, honestly, I would have to go with... I would honestly have to go with Susan Sarandon. And the thing is, I go with Susan Sarandon because she does have a very tragic background in the movie. I think you know exactly which part of her character it is I'm talking about here, right? Yeah, it's because of the fact that the only thing that was in between the two states where Thelma and Louise were traveling, between them and Mexico, was Texas. And she just says nothing. She doesn't even want to talk about what happened to Texas. But that's not the thing is, whatever happened to her in Texas, whether it was exactly what Thelma had went through or not, even though I don't think we even need to know what happened to her there. We just need to know that it was just something really awful. And it just also gives her character so much dimensionality to the point that we already see why she is the way she is. And plus, I think that it really is just the perfect catalyst for why this movie has only remained so powerful to this day.
A fucking man. You nailed it on the head. I literally have the exact same thoughts as you when it comes to that. But yeah, love the movie. And the ending, one of the best endings of all time. Even though I knew ending before I had watched this movie for the first time, it's like you still feel the impact. It's one of the few times where even having known the way this film wraps up, I still felt it. I was still like, oh my God. Like, I shaken up, goosebumps, chills. Screaming, crying, throwing up, all these different emotions. And also, one other thing to shout out, and I don't know if you had brought this up, but this might be my favorite score from Hans. This might be my favorite score he's done.
It is my second favorite Hans Zimmer score, actually.
What's your first?
Thin Red Line.
Haven't seen the movie, so I can't comment on that. But I will be seeing it soon, that's for sure. Yeah. No, I mean, Thelma Louise is incredible. It's so good. I mean, how could one watch this movie and not love it? Seriously, like, how could one watch this and not at least like it? It's just, it's that good. It's a fun adventure movie. It's a great feminist movie, but it's also just a great badass movie, period. And it's following these women that are running away, not just to run away, but they have a reason to run away. And then obviously something happens that puts a pause into why they were actually running away. And then they're on the run for much different reasons than they expected. And it's so captivating from start to finish. It's so incredible. It really is one of the best films I've ever seen. And it's slowly become like a film that has crawled into my top 100. It's honestly close to the top 50 for me. And this year when I rewatched it, when it came to the Criterion Collection, it honestly made me look at it as not only my favorite Ridley Scott film, but I really think that this is the best thing he's ever directed. I really genuinely believe that this is the best thing he's ever made.
You know, something I did want to mention that I didn't mention when I was talking about it earlier is that I feel like, especially around now, we are past the very first moments when the Me Too movement came around. It is when you think about the movie in light of how we've seen the world ever since then, it's become even more powerful now. But also, it's like, because this is a movie all about two women who just simply want to have fun, but it's the men in their lives that put a pause on that, to the point where you just watch the movie feeling like, oh god, all the men in this movie are just so awful, to the point where even if there was one man who wanted to do something good for the two of them, he would just be helpless. He would just be as helpless as the two title characters are. And of course, that one man is none other than Harvey Keitel's character.
Of course, Harvey Keitel always comes back doing something, because that's what Harvey Keitel does.
Mm-hmm. God, it also just throws me off thinking about how the cop who just is really set out on killing the two of them is Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day. So, yeah.
That's right. and we also get a young Brad Pitt here too.
In the movie role that just made him a star in the first place too.
I absolutely believe that truly. But yeah, Thelma Louise, my number one. It's the best thing he's ever done. Love it so much. And you know, if we could just get, like, really, Scott claims he has so many projects under his sleeve that he's working on right now. If we could please just get one more film where he works with both Susan and Gina, that would be incredible. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's a sci-fi film. Just anything. Like, anything.
It doesn't have to.
Love for them to work.
They don't have to be in the same movie either. I just want to see them working with him at least once again.
I know. But how sick would it be? How do you think film Twitter would react if it was announced that Ridley Scott was directing a film with the two of them in it together?
People would lose their minds. Everybody would go crazy.
I know. It was like equivalent to when it was announced that Martin McDonagh was working with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson again. Like, everyone just lost their minds. Everyone's like, oh my god, it's happening. But yeah, Thelma Louise, my number one. So we're gonna talk about some films quickly that didn't make our list, but before we do that, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So Jamie, what is your list?
So from 5 to 1, at number 5, I had The Last Duel. Number 4, The Duelists. 3, Thelma and Louise. 2, Alien. And number 1, Blade Runner, The Final Cut.
And to recap, my list coming in number 5 is Gladiator, number 4, The Martian, number 3, American Gangster, number 2, Matchstick Men, and number 1, Thelma and Louise. So that is it for our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So Jamie, what are some films that you want to give a shout out to that were just that nearly missed your list? Other than the films that were on my list that didn't make your list, what are some films you want to give a mention to?
Okay, so I know that you smack talked The Counselor earlier. That's one I actually want to shout out because I actually don't think it's that bad. I actually kind of like it, if I'm being honest.
Well, there's always meant to be one fan of something. It's quite all right.
Well, the thing is, it's just Cormac McCarthy is one of my an author I've been wanting to read a lot more for a long while. But so obviously the thought that he was writing a screenplay and it was going to be directed by Ridley Scott, that was exciting to me. It isn't quite the movie I was hoping it would be, but I think that the absolute absurdity of it all is something that I think we need to see more, especially from most filmmakers around working right now. Even if it's not good, I'm sure you would agree on that. Now, maybe not The Counselor. It doesn't have to be The Counselor, but I mean...
No, I get what you're going at. I get what you're going at.
Yeah. And I also think his... I also want to say... I think his Prometheus is kind of underrated, too. I know that's a very hot take for most people, but hey, I actually really dig Prometheus. A lot of what happens in the movie is dumb as hell, and but I think that thinking about how it was basically the origin for the alien that we see in Alien, I think that that's a concept at least worth looking into.
Interesting. I also will give a shout out to Prometheus because I think that is a very strong film. I don't care what anyone says. I love it. I'm a big fan of it. I'm a big fan of Black Hawk Down. I want to shout that out as well. I remember watching that in high school when I was going through films during a variety of different wars. And when we were focusing on films that were set during, you know, the 80s and the 90s that dealt with war, this was one of them, and it's great. It's very underappreciated. Another one that Ridley Scott film that people don't really talk about. And
it's always been strange to me, especially when that is one of the three movies he was Oscar nominated for.
I know. That's just so crazy that he's talk about a filmmaker that has been nominated for Best Director multiple times where their film wasn't even nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Like, it's nuts that was one of them. And then I guess another honorable mention to shout out, even though I haven't seen it in a long time, I heard the director's cut of this is, like, the cut, the, like, true definitive cut of the movie, and that's Kingdom of Heaven from 2005. I remember watching this being...
That is one, that's one I just owe a rewatch, especially the director's cut. So
yeah, I've heard the director's cut. This is like really spectacular, and not that the theatrical cut is bad. It's certainly not bad. I've always liked the movie. I watched it again a long time ago, and I remember really, really enjoying it. But maybe that director's cut is going to make me change my tune on it for sure. And you know, talking a little bit about the films he has coming out. So first off, we have Napoleon, which at the time of this recording, I have seen Napoleon already. And unfortunately, I wasn't very high on it. I was pretty disappointed with it, I'm not going to lie. But I would love for you to talk about your anticipation for Napoleon.
Well, for one, I think I told you about this one in Pride already, Brian, but I got a ticket to see it on 70mm. I think that tells you everything about how much I'm looking forward to it.
It's probably going to look great on 70mm. I mean, the film looks visually incredible, but on 70mm, it's probably going to look really, really cool.
Oh, I can't. That is one reason why I can't wait. And the thing is like, it doesn't have... We don't really get a lot of new stuff on 70mm too. So I figure, you know, that at least getting the chance to watch something like this on, especially a new release at that, on a film print of any sort,
is just something
that I have to take the opportunity at least somewhere, because I think I told you this already, but I did see last weekend, I saw May-December on 35mm. A lot of my friends were saying, you know, you could just wait for Netflix for that one. I was like, no, the TIFF Lightbox got it on 35mm, so that's the only way I'm going to be seeing it.
Also, you got to see, also, that's a film that's worth seeing on the big screen, regardless of how you see it.
Exactly, yeah.
And then,
but
Gladiator 2. Just... Go ahead.
Okay. But also, I just wanted to say that we've seen so many people try to bring the story of Napoleon to the big screen. We've seen Kubrick try to do it. There is a French silent movie about Napoleon already, but I just think, you know, with the fact that it's Ridley Scott who's doing it, it should at least be somewhat exciting to me. Which I'll also shout out Abel Gance's epic Napoleon, which is a five hour long movie, by the way, but absolutely worth watching too. So yeah, you don't have to watch it all. You don't have to watch it all in one sitting, though. There is an intermission, so yeah.
And then Gladiator 2, which comes out next year, next November. It's going to be going back to filming in just a few weeks. Production was halted in the midst of the SAG-AFTRA strike and everything. But when they announced that this is something that has been like in the works for a very long time. When Ridley Scott finally confirmed that a sequel to Gladiator was being made, I was like, okay, sure. Okay, fine, whatever. I'll watch. I guess we'll see how it pans out. But what excites me the most about this film is the fucking cast. And when you have an actor like Paul Mescal headline this film, first of all, I'm so excited for everyone to finally know who Paul Mescal is. Because even though he is an Oscar nominee, unfortunately, when you walk up to a typical mainstream movie watcher, you bring up, oh, Paul Mescal. They're like, who? And then they watch this movie and they're going to be like, wow, Paul Mescal immediately becoming a fan. I'm so excited to see this different side.
I already became a big fan after Sun. So yeah.
Hey, I've been a fan since After Sun as well. But now, like, everybody's going to know who he is. Not just film fans, but like everyone's going to know who he is from this movie. Yeah. And then on top of Paul, you have freaking Denzel reuniting with Ridley Scott, which that's awesome. That's incredible. You have Jamin Hunsu. You have Pedro Pascal. You have Joseph Quinn from Stranger Things. You have Fred Heidenker. I think that's his name. And it's like a cool ensemble.
You also got Connie Nielsen returning too. So
Connie Nielsen coming back. You have a great cast assembled here. I'm so interested to see how this pans out. Because usually when we get sequels to movies like met decades after the original, it could be a mixed bag. I mean, Blade Runner proved us wrong for sure. Like Blade Runner, arguably Blade Runner 2049, you could say whatever you want about, but that's like pretty much like a film that some people consider to be on the same level as the original, and some consider it to be even better than the original. I don't know if that's going to be the case with Gladiator 2, but I'm hoping that this is a win for Ridley Scott and for the talent involved. The thing that saddens me the most about this film is that Barry Keoghan was, I believe, supposed to play the villain of this movie. And then he dropped out to do something else. And I'm like, Barry, what the fuck? And for anyone who has seen Saltburn, You know the places that he goes. You know exactly where he goes. But regardless, I'm sure the film is still going to kick so much ass. I'm sure it's still going to be pretty, pretty cool. And I'm excited to go back to this world, but also I'm excited for the world, everyone to finally know who Paul Mescal is, and then they'll appreciate him just like the way that us film geeks appreciate him. So what is your anticipation like for Gladiator 2?
It's so high up to the point where I feel like I should revisit Gladiator 1 again soon.
You absolutely should.
So yeah. Because I just think that, you know, that when we talk about how Ridley Scott basically revitalized the sword and sandal genre of filmmaking, we still need that. I feel like when he revitalized it, it only came back for like what? How many years since then? So it's nice to see it's really, really coming back now, you know?
And how excited are you for Paul being in this movie? I feel like this is a perfect role for him, honestly.
Oh, I saw Paul Mescal, and then I said, you know what? Don't even show me a trailer. Just I'll just wait till it comes out. Because Brian, you know my mantra, especially with trailers. So
yes, of course. Everyone's gonna lose their mind though when the trailer comes out for this. Yeah.
And I will not be watching the trailer. So for those of you listening who also follow me, do not send me the trailer. I won't watch it. Or if you do send it to me, go ahead. I still won't watch it.
So yeah, that's all that's coming out of Ridley Scott's filmography. And to close out this episode, you know, I, again, commend him for being the filmmaker that takes risks, does films that are very different from one another. I admire him for always pumping out a lot of work. I admire that he's still going at the age that he's at. And I'm excited to see whatever he does for the rest of his career. So what are your closing thoughts on Ridley Scott?
You know, the fact that he is one of the most hit or miss filmmakers working today, it's the fact that he's so consistent in his he is so consistent in just the sort of things that he is bringing to the screen that always makes watching his stuff, regardless of what it is, so exciting. Whether it's a period piece, another science fiction movie, or who knows, maybe even another comedy again. You just need to see Ridley Scott's name on something, and then that's how you know I'm there. I'm just there. So yeah.
Jamie, thank you so much for coming on today to talk to me about Ridley Scott. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to talk with me about Ridley Scott. So thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Brian, I just wanted to say thank you again so much for having me on this new iteration of Film Fragments. It was just such a blast being here again.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm so excited to have you on again in the near future to talk about something else for sure. And I would love for you to tell the listeners where they could find you online. Where could they find your work?
So right now you can find me on Twitter at Firewalk with Jamie. That's FireWalkJamie. Just at least get the spelling of my first name right. Otherwise, you're just going to be frustrated looking for my work in general. You can also find a lot of my writing on Cinema from the Spectrum, as I am the head writer there. And you can also find my work on my Substack newsletter, Clouds of Gaia, at cloudsofgaia.substack.com. That is CloudsofGaia.substack.com, where I write about a lot of things, whether it be films, video games, music, just anything that comes to mind, really.
And don't forget the letterbox.
And of course, the letterbox. You can find my letterbox at letterbox.com/Jamie Revenol. That is J A I M E Rebanal.
I will put links for all that in the description below, and you guys can follow me on all socials at Brian Suffield, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. You guys could follow this podcast on all podcasting platforms. Subscribe, share, and the round. We have a Twitter and Instagram, so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite films directed by Ridley Scott. I'm so curious to hear your guys' list. Stay tuned for so many great episodes coming your way. Lots of great topics, lots of great guests. Be on the lookout for that. Guys, thank you so much, as always, for listening to Film Fragments. I appreciate every single one of you, and I will see you guys for the very next episode. Take care, everybody.